You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 477.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station and another interview with an inspiring young couple who to many are living the dream. But that dream can come at a cost, or at the very least, a certain amount of sacrifice. I first became aware of Carl Lang and Ellie Berry, the team that go to make up Tough Souls, when I interviewed Caroline Allen earlier on in the year in podcast number 463 about her newly released book, The Island Way, where she's linked various trails in Ireland to form a north to south route. Now, Carl and Ellie have set themselves a slightly different task of being the first people in the Republic of Ireland to walk all 42 national trails end to end and link them all together with public transport. That's a total of over 4,000 kilometres. They started this in April 2017 and to date, September 2018, they've completed 35 of them, some 3,000 kilometres so far. However, to do this, they've given everything up. Their home, their possessions and their jobs, surviving solely on savings and a handful of generous Patreon donors. Keeping costs down where they can, they've wild camped as much as possible and aimed to live on a minuscule budget of €20 a day. Along the way, they've also recorded their journey in gritty detail, all the highs and lows for us to enjoy. And you can find them on Tough Souls, that's S-O-L-E-S, .ie, or on their various social media channels, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And if you do look them up, please make sure you subscribe or leave a message and share some outdoor love. If you can't find them, all the links will be found, of course, on the Outdoor Station podcast show notes. So, what inspired them to give it all up and start living this particular dream?
There's sort of two stories. One story is that we always used to go abroad on holidays and things, and we always used to go adventure elsewhere. We did the Camino, we went to Estonia for a couple months, went to France, and people there would always say, oh, you're from Ireland, Ireland is amazing. And we'd be kind of like, is it really that good? And so the first story is that we decided to see if those people were correct. The other, and perhaps more true story, is that I saw a big list of trails and thought, nobody's ever done all of these. We could do all of these. And then we started. So that's kind of the motivating factor really is that it seemed feasible from the beginning. And we wanted to see if we could be the people to feasible.
As I understand it, there's 42 national trails, I think you said, 42 national trails in Southern Ireland that you're attempting to do?
Ooh, it is the Republic of Ireland.
I beg your pardon.
No problem. It's between 42 and 44. Two of them are closed, one of them is opening. It's kind of a bit, you know, hand wavy. And they total to about 4,000 kilometers in distance.
Now I went in prior to the interview and preparing for this, I went back to your very first video you have on your YouTube channel. And you look so young and sweet. But the thing that struck me there, first of all, was, we're going to do this. It's going to take us about 6 months. And that's about 18 months ago, is it?
That's exactly right. It's 18 months ago.
Yeah, so when we started this, we based it off of previous walking holidays, how we'd kind of timed it, the number of rest days we needed. But we didn't really factor in traveling between the different trails and also just kind of enjoying the country. So there's no point in us trying to kind of see all of Ireland if we don't take enough time to actually see it all. It was definitely a big mistake not to factor in as much travel time, but also we just kind of we got about halfway through last year and realized we just kind of wanted to slow down and see a lot more of the country.
Yeah, there's definitely a feeling from you, again in the videos, that you started off with a huge amount of enthusiasm and speed and youth in, you know, in like, let's do this. And I've just watched your last video where you're sitting there and you're tired and you're weary. And I'm mentally thinking, you're sick to death of this, aren't you?
I have to say, both of us are sick. We are both currently, you know, experiencing a throat infection and stuff. So we were maybe a little bit more downtrodden than we usually would be. But we definitely, there have been a lot of ups and downs during this. And I actually haven't gone back and watched our first video. And I'm a little bit scared too, because I feel like I may want to go back in time and stop myself from doing it at all in the first place. Or at least doing it under the conditions that we've done it under. We quit our jobs, we moved out of our apartment to go and walk. And I mean, that is a really adventurous thing to do, but it means it's very hard as well. Not having a base, not having anywhere to return to, kind of getting to the end of a trail and having to walk again the next day, that's definitely very difficult. And it does lead to a lot of weariness and a lot of curling up and lying on the ground in the middle of a trail and thinking, maybe I should just stop and go home. But we are now, at this point, we're 35 trails down. We've only got 7 left to go. And we're so close to the end that no matter how weary we are, we still have to complete it, you know? But we may complete it a little bit slower still than we have been going. Especially as it comes into winter and so on.
I think a lot of people would admire your choices to do that, to finish your jobs and to pack everything up to do it. I think everybody has some sort of romantic ambition to do it. And only very few people I've spoken to really have truly done that. So you shouldn't be downtrodden about it. It's actually quite an achievement to let go of all that stuff that controls you in life. And have the freedom of the road in front of you. But the other side of it, as you've just explained very eloquently, is it is also tough to keep going every single day.
Hence the name of the project.
Well, indeed. Indeed. Who came up with that name? It's quite a nice one.
That was Ellie. Ellie has all the good ideas.
Yeah. We were just sitting. I think we spent a couple of hours sitting in a cafe trying to figure out what, like, if we were going to do this, what we were going to call it. It was kind of interesting, actually. Neither of us had ever, I have a degree in photography, but neither of us had ever shot a video or tried to edit it before. Certainly not put them anywhere or kind of publicize it. So I don't think we quite realized that only half of the effort was actually going to go into the walking, that filming, editing, writing, was just as half the battle as actually completing the trails was. That was a kind of, I guess, a surprise to us. I don't know if I would do it the same way now, but I'm really glad that we have done it this way. I really enjoyed the learning curve. It's been a great kind of thrown into the deep end experience in that regard. But Yeah.
I think in life, the fastest way to learn to do anything is to actually get in the deep end and get your hands dirty. And you've certainly done that. What a lot of people say is sometimes that, as you've just said yourself, that the social media, in inverted commas, activities these days actually sometimes takes you away from just enjoying the experience of what you're doing rather than just recording it. But I think a lot of people don't realize just how much time and work goes into maintaining the blog and the Instagram and the Facebook and keeping everybody in touch in all these different ways. There's quite a demand on your time, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's often harder to get a video out on Saturdays than it is to walk another 15 kilometers. It's definitely a big demand on time, and having to edit in a tent or write in a tent or tweet from a tent, none of that is as easy as it sounds, definitely. And it doesn't even sound very easy.
But there are definitely, like, the amount of support we've got from strangers, we've been offered beds by people we don't know. We even stayed with a couple of people for like a week. We've met such amazing people through them finding us on social media that, while it's more of a job than we expected, it's also given us some amazing experiences and opportunities and like really amazing support.
It's even though it's really hard, it's definitely worth it, and it has been worth it for us to do
just finding the balance, really, like knowing to kind of enjoy the moment. Like when you're on the side of a mountain, you don't want to be constantly thinking about, oh, should I take a photo of this, or you want to enjoy the experience as well as, I guess, sharing it. So it's definitely been a balance that we've been working on.
I see now, looking at your social media, as a lot of people will no doubt be doing while they're listening to this now, you've now got, obviously, you've got your blog site, you've got Instagram, you've got Facebook, you've got YouTube, and you've got Twitter as well. Now, you know, you're well organized now, and I see you also you've had some financial support with people with Patreon as well, which is great. And I obviously recommend anybody listening to this to check you out and see if they want to contribute as well, because I'm sure you'd appreciate that. But you know, you seem like you've got it all under control at the moment. How does that differ then from the very beginning when you first started? I'm just thinking for people who might be inspired by you to do something similar. What advice would you give them as regards the organisation of all the background stuff that's involved in recording a project like this?
Well, I guess like in social media specifically, once we figured out how all the different accounts can kind of link together, and you click send once and it goes to all the different outlets, that's been a great boon. And knowing just how to kind of, if you have 2 or 3 days off, getting 2 or 3 things done and scheduling them so that you can be out enjoying the side of the mountain when the next video goes out or when the next blog post goes up. But I guess in the more technical side, like if we look at our gear, the majority of my bag is technology, which surprises a lot of people. So we have a laptop, we have a drone, we have extra batteries, charging equipment, cameras, like an external hard drive to actually save everything onto, some extra SD cards. the list is kind of never ending. So learning how to kind of cut that down to the bare basics, I think takes a while. You never know just how many charging cables you need until you're on the go. But what have we learned since the start?
Well, one thing I would definitely tell myself again, if I could go back in time, is to set up Patreon earlier. We actually only set that up towards the end of our first year, and since then it has made an enormous change to how we can walk. To the way we do this. Unlike, I think, a lot of people, we're not doing this to raise money for a charity or anything like that. We're doing it because we want to be the first people to have done it and to get more people out walking. And so to have Patreon, to be able to fund this, not just out of our own savings, which had reached absolutely zero by that time, has made just an enormous change. And I definitely recommend setting that up as soon as you think you have something that people might support you for.
And we've got such amazing support from our patrons.
Such incredible support.
Yeah, thank you so much if you happen to be one of the 31 people that currently support us. It's been a really rewarding and amazing to hear from these different people from kind of all across the globe at this point. It's been great.
So following on from that then, it sounds from the way you talk about the National Trails, and certainly the sort of tone, the general tone I pick up from various comments you've made on your YouTube videos, is people in Ireland seem to be unaware of the amount of trails that there are.
Yeah, that's definitely true. a lot of people will know the Kerry Way or the Wicklow Way, but that's it. And there are 40 more of those trails. And a lot of them are almost exactly the same quality. A lot of them are really, really excellent quality trails that, that people just completely bypass. And even, I mean, we didn't know about these trails at all. And I have one that goes directly through my hometown. And Ellie has three that go through her hometown. And we absolutely did not know about these trails. And it's such a travesty, really, because they're fantastic trails. There's some really excellent walking to be had all around the country. And there's so much to learn and to see.
It surprises people when we say just how much walking there is in such a tiny country. When we say that we're walking, people think we're going off for a week or so. And then we say, oh, no, we've been doing this for 6 months, a year, or however long. And it really surprises people. Of course, there's been a couple of not-so-great trails. But on a whole, I think we've had some really incredible walking.
Yeah, and these also are only the multi-day trails that we're doing. There's an enormous network of looped walks as well that are, you know, about 10 kilometers long or around there that you can do in an afternoon that are also excellent and really worth walking. And it's kind of a pity that not more people have been out on these trails.
I think it's definitely becoming a much more popular activity here.
Yeah. The Camino got quite popular here in Ireland not too long ago. And I think a lot of people would have returned from the Camino and thought, why don't we have that here? And then maybe, hopefully, they looked it up and thought, oh, we do actually have that here.
Yeah, I noticed actually I was at one of the travel shows and there's a company, I think, called Camino Ways, who specialise in all the Camino Ways around the world. And they offer it as a sort of a package or luggage transfer type holiday type of thing, and there were quite a few in Ireland, and that was one of the first things that made me realize that actually there's a lot more there than I realized. So we're all in the same boat in many respects, but I'm surprised that the Republic of Ireland outdoors community is not sort of promoting it more.
I suppose I don't really have the answer for that. I think many people do know about the Wicklow and Kerry Ways, and I think for some that tends to be a gateway. And the Dingle Way, actually, now that I mention it. Those three trails are probably 10 times more popular than any of the other trail.
This year, we have noticed that there are a lot of kind of local walking festivals happening around the country. Mm. So we noticed quite a few down in kind of the southeast of southwest of the country, down in kind of Kerry and Cork, kind of the very bottom of the west. And kind of up through the Midlands as well. And I know that there's one in Donegal, which is the very kind of northwest of the country. They have one coming up in a week or two, actually. There's been definitely in the past year or so, we've noticed
a bit of an uptake.
Yeah, we actually did one of our trails as part of a walking festival. Mm-hmm. We did the Crowpatrick Heritage Trail Walking Festival. The trail itself is kind of... it's kind of in Mayo, which is the western coast, kind of middle of the western coast, I guess. And that was 3 days walking a little over 60 kilometres with a huge group, which was a completely different experience. I don't think we've ever walked with, I don't know how many people that was, 40 people.
It was like 100 people.
It was a lot of people. It was really enjoyable to kind of to see that many people getting outside and enjoying the outdoors. So maybe there's a walking revolution coming.
I think it's maybe a part of a cycle because Ireland is a very outdoorsy country. 50 years ago, agriculture was almost the only thing you could do here. And I think it's a bit of a cycle now. More people move to the cities and they're indoors a bit more. And maybe those people now are getting a little bit tired of being in the city and they're going to go out and go back out in the country and kind of hopefully spend more time outside.
So it sounds like you're definitely pioneering the way. Have you found fame then recently in the last 12 months? Are you being invited to these walking festivals to talk, or you know, schools or whatever, to encourage people more to consider the outdoors?
Not so much, but if you're listening and you're interested, please do give us a shout. We'd be very happy to do that. A couple of people, I mean, definitely it's growing. Our popularity as such is growing a little bit. We have occasionally gotten shouts across the street of Tupsals, and you know, that's definitely very interesting, definitely an experience that we'd never expected to have. I'm hopeful that because of the videos, because they're kind of a little bit timeless, you know, I don't think the trails will change so much that our videos will stop being relevant. I'm hopeful that, you know, even in 5 or 10 years, people will be able to watch our videos and think, oh, that's right on my doorstep. I should go and do that.
The Outdoor Station is your one-stop shop for audio and video entertainment for the self-powered traveller. You can find us online, on internet radio, on smartphones, on smart TVs, on YouTube, on Apple TV, on Now TV, and on Facebook. You can also stream us live via the iTunes app or TuneIn radio app. The list is continually expanding, and for full details of how to subscribe, download, or stream and enjoy our massive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk. So actually, now let's talk about trails, because everybody's listening to this and obviously now inspired to can look at Ireland as another location rather than going off to the outer reaches of Europe. It's just across the water, after all. There's obviously 42 trails, too much to talk about in one go. So between you, do you think you could just come up with a handful of suggestions and descriptions about particular trails that are fairly diverse, you know, very mountainous, rural, or, you know, through suburbia, canal side, that type of thing? And possibly, and roughly where they're located in Ireland as well, for people to consider how easy it would be to get to. Perhaps you could just do a couple each, you know, like your favourite ones, most interesting, and then the worst, boggiest, wettest, horrible one. I think you've had a bit of rain over there.
Oh, yeah, tell me about the rain. I personally really enjoyed our time in Donegal. So you can get to Donegal town itself fairly easy. It's the most northerly county in Ireland. So once you get up there, you can walk out a trail straight from the town itself. So that wasn't too hard to get to. So that was the Blue Stack Way, and that can link into the Slieve Column Kill, which was definitely one of my favourite trails up there. It goes through quite a few easy enough mountain passes. None of the walking in Donegal was particularly technical or challenging, but the landscape there was just so breathtaking, and we were so lucky to get it when it was as dry as it was. We'd been kind of trepidatious or nervous about heading to Donegal because it is so infamously wet up there, and we really, really wanted to hit it on a good spell. So we went up there during the drought this summer. So we probably had some of the easiest bog crossings we will ever have in our lives. But that was definitely a really, really beautiful place. Once you're out in kind of the middle of nowhere there, the transport does kind of disappear. There is a initiative, I guess is what you'd call it, called Local Link, which is, it's like a small minivan that drives around the place, and it kind of goes through each village once a day at a very odd time. But it's a local driver, and more often than not, we were the only ones in the minibus, and he'd point out all the local history or where he lived. Or it was quite, yeah, I think Donegal was definitely one for me.
Yeah, Donegal is definitely a great place, and a lot of the trails go through what are known as Gaeltachts. So Ireland has a national language called Irish, and a lot of the people who live along the trails in Donegal live in the Gaeltacht, where Irish is exclusively spoken or almost exclusively spoken, which is a really interesting way to see some of Ireland's heritage and see some of the almost the last native speakers of the language, you know, which is really, really enjoyable. And that actually is why the trails have slightly weird names. So in case you wanted to spell it, it's S-L-I for Shlí, which means way, and then Columbkill, which is kind of the Saint Columbkill. Just best guess into Google will probably get you there. For me, one of, or well, my favorite trail in the entire country is the Miner's Way, which is in County Roscommon, very much what you would describe as the middle of nowhere in Ireland. You can fly into Sligo Airport and get a bus out to Roscommon. That's probably the easiest way to do it. It goes through a couple of slightly larger-ish towns, including Boyle, which happens to be where I'm from, and definitely has no impact whatsoever on my rating of this trail. The trail itself is fantastic. It's, you know, you could spend between 6 and 10 days doing it and various offshoots of it, through just some really breathtaking scenery and stuff you absolutely wouldn't expect. Even if you're from Ireland, Roscommon doesn't come into mind at all for somewhere where you go to walk. But there's these fantastic rolling hills, there's lakes everywhere. There's a lot of heritage there. One of the parts that the trail goes through is the Carrockiel passage tombs, which are these 4,000-year-old passage tombs on top of a mountain, basically. And you get up there and you have an astonishing view across almost out to the coast. And it's a really incredible place and really worth doing. So the easiest way to get there and do that is get the bus to Boyle and walk from there and spend some time at my local pub and ask for me and see if you can get some more information about it.
And leave a drink behind the bar. So just as, again, for people that are not necessarily from the UK, but maybe Americans or whatever, how long is the sort of the longest trail, taking it easy without trying to kill yourself, days-wise?
Yeah, days-wise, I would say 10 days is probably the longest you'd ever spend on a trail here, unless you hook a few together, which you can do. There is the E8, which is a trail from kind of the very bottom left edge of Ireland all the way to Dublin, which is many hundreds of kilometres. I don't have the number off the top of my head. Yeah. There's also the Bear Breffni Way, or the Ireland Way, if you would like to extend that into the north, which is a lot of days. That's 40 or 50 days. But those all link together these smaller national waymark trails, which would be a maximum of 10 days, but probably an average of 3 or 4.
I guess it also depends. Like, Ireland isn't the wildest of places, so there will be road walking on the longer trails, kind of connecting bits. So I do know that on the Ireland Way or the Bear Breffni Way, there are some road linking sections you're not walking on a motorway or anything, but there are those linking sections on a couple of them. So probably the longest you could go relatively off-road would be down in Kerry, which is kind of the southwest corner of Ireland, and you get probably 9 or 10 days down there of pretty much just trail walking.
Yeah, pretty much no road on those trails.
Yeah, because I was thinking, you know, the average person, say, has got a 2-week holiday and they're listening to this and think, okay, I'd like to do one or two trails. It gives them an idea of how long it might take them. The other thing that would also cross people's mind, and mine in particular, is everybody's on a budget these days. You know, accommodation, wild camping, interacting with the locals type of thing. How easy is it to wild camp for a start? I know you've written a piece about this, and I think it'd be just worth touching on that slightly. But wild camping itself, and how do people receive you, you know, doing that type of thing in rural areas?
It is a little bit of a... Yeah, kind of a grey area in Ireland. I don't think it's a very popular activity here. So I guess there hasn't been many. There wasn't much for us to draw on when we were kind of looking into it, whether or not people mind it or not. In general, we've never had a negative experience with people. We have, on occasion, knocked on a farmer or a local's door and asked if there was a field nearby that they wouldn't mind us camping in, and we've never been told no. We've definitely gotten a couple of funny looks, and kind of maybe a slightly long pause, but we've never had a fully negative experience, which is really nice. It kind of varies trail to trail and area to area, and how wet the bog is. A lot of the remote walking in Ireland goes through bog, so it depends if you're able to find a nice spot there to camp or not, or if you end up in forestry or somewhere else. There's a lot of the trails go through working forestry, which is Cuilte land. Is it semi-private? Yeah, it's kind of the main forestry company in Ireland. And a lot of the trails go through their land. And in one or two specific sections, they do have areas where they are more than happy to have wild campers. And the rest of the time, it's not...
Yeah, it's certainly not encouraged. But as long as you look out for big logging trucks, you're going to be okay. We, again, have never had a bad experience doing that. There are some trails where it's completely fine to wild camp. The canals, for instance. So there's three canals that make up these, or as part of these trails. The Grand Canal, the Royal Canal, and the Barrow Way, which goes along the River Barrow, which was made into a canal, or made navigable, I should say. And on those three, you can camp anywhere. You can just set down your tent and you're fine. And absolutely nobody minds.
The Barrow Way is probably the best of those three, actually. Mm-hmm. The Royal Canal and the Grand Canal are in the process of being turned into cycleways. So they're a bit dug up and torn up at the moment. Yeah. But the Barrow Way was actually a really magical experience. Mm-hmm. Pretty much a grass towpath the whole length of the trail, and you can camp at the old locks. That was really wonderful.
That's a fantastic trail, and you can start that straight from Dublin. If you fly into Dublin, you can walk out the Grand Canal for about a day and then hook a left at a place called Lowtown and follow the Barrow for another 6 days, and you go through some of Ireland's best towns, in my opinion, and you end up in the last place of the trail. I've suddenly forgotten the name of the place.
St. Mullins.
The last day of the trail, you end up in a place called St. Mullins, which has this incredible cluster of medieval churches. And one of the high crosses of Ireland is there. And there's a pub. So that's basically all that's great. That's a great way to end a trail. That is fantastic. Really worth doing.
Well, that's a great description and a good confidence booster for people thinking of coming in. Certainly, the wild camping thing it's a grey area in many places. Obviously, the same in England, but it can be abused sometimes. And it's good to hear that hasn't been happening in Ireland. So you've got a warm reception, which is good, or at least a tepid reception, which is good. now, talking of pubs, I believe Ireland's got one or two, and these trails are again for people that might be coming from a distance and are just a little bit concerned about topping up, as it were, with basic needs, or at least getting a meal every now and again. Most of these trails go through villages where there's always some local supply of some kind. Definitely.
I think the longest we ever went without seeing a pub was maybe a day and a half, and that was through Ireland's most remote areas at all. So nearly all of the trails go through a town a day, give or take.
How much each town or village actually has in the way of supplies varies greatly. This year we lived on a lot of fruit cake.
Yes.
Because every tiny shop seems to have it, and it's only for about €2. And to be honest, I don't think I can ever touch a fruit cake again. But for the size, the weight and the cost, it was probably the most effective food.
We also managed to do this entire year without bringing our stove with us. So we didn't actually have a camping stove. And we still survived and ate quite easily without any real hassle. So I suppose that should tell you that it's really not that hard to stock up as you go. If you did have dehydrated food, or I guess you could carry actual food and cook it with your stove, you're going to be completely okay in Ireland. There's really no difficulty there.
Coming on to equipment, that's a good way to introduce it. What have you learned and adapted? And I mean more adapted rather than learned, but learned and adapted and changed from your initial rucksack full of equipment. What have you I don't need this, I don't need that. And obviously, your cooking gear is actually quite a volume and weight as well in a pack.
Well, so, when we started walking, we were literally moving out of our apartment the day we started. So for our first week or so of walking, we had stuff with us that just wasn't necessary, just because we had needed it to live before we left. So for the first week or so, our packs were very heavy. And when we finished our first trail, we chose it purposefully because we could walk out of Dublin, where we were living at the time, to very close to Carl's parents' house, so we could throw out a load of stuff that we realised we didn't need. Clothes have probably been something that we've changed the most, cutting down. Of course, we want to have layers, but I think we've got it down to the bare minimum of layers, because they always weigh more than you want.
Yeah, and I think we've just grown more accustomed to looking and smelling disgusting as a trade-off for walking further every day. Throwing out clothes is definitely the number one way for us to get have less in our bags. And cooking stuff was definitely a big one, where we decided to leave our stove, and that was a big help in terms of volume, at least. As well, we carried a drone with us for nearly all of the trails, and that was great because we got some really fantastic footage and footage in places where no one has ever flown a drone, which is great, but it does weigh quite a lot. And deciding to leave that home for a while was a good decision, I think.
I think the thing with the technology and some of the list of things you mentioned earlier on, Ellie, is that sometimes it's not necessarily the tech that you use. It's all the supporting tech that goes with it, like the chargers and then the leads and the plugs and so on. Two or three items, all of a sudden you've got a kilo of chargers in your bag, haven't you?
Yeah, that's very true. And actually, speaking of bags, it took me a while to find the right bag when you're talking about kind of improving or adapting. I'm on my third bag at this point. The first one, it actually just turned out it didn't fit me for the number of liters I wanted, and for the weight I wanted it to carry, it was just too big for me. And the second bag I got was pretty good, and then kind of spontaneously broke. But we both have Osprey packs at the moment, and they've been wonderful for us. They've really, really worked well.
Yeah, I've had an Osprey bag for years now, and to be honest, it's never, ever gone wrong on me. I feel like I'll never wear another bag anymore. I think unless Osprey turn out to be sacrificing goats or something, I think I'll always wear an Osprey bag.
You can tell you're long-distance hikers, because short-distance hikers carry a bag and long-distance hikers wear a bag.
This podcast is brought to you by backpackinglight.co.uk, offering a select range of products for the lightweight outdoors enthusiast. See the full range, along with a wealth of free outdoor hints, tips and videos at backpackinglight.co.uk.
Anyway, let's continue the topic of gear for a short while, because I know people will be interested in that. Now, let me just assume, and just give me the yes or no that I'm correct. You've probably got just clothes that you wear and a change of clothes, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's put that to one side. You've listed off some of the tech that you've got, so we can assume you've got mixed variations of, I don't know, GoPros and drones and cameras, and hopefully not a tripod, because that's horrible, but there you go. So put that to one side. So what else are you actually taking with you? What other gear have you found necessary?
Well, we take a laptop with us as well. That is part of that gear, I suppose. Other than that, let me see. Yeah, of course, we have our tent, which is an MSR Hubba Hubba. And that is fantastic. That I would never, another piece of kit that I'll never leave behind, I think, is that tent. And thankfully, I got it at a major discount, which is the reason that I own it. We both have sleeping bags. Ellie has a North Face.
I have the gold kazoo. That's been,
yes.
It's probably slightly overkill. It is overkill in the summer. But last year, I had a more like a kind of 1-2 season bag that I kind of hoped I could stretch for the whole year, but winter just never seems to end this year, so I knew that I needed something warmer, so that has been really great. And we both have Thermarest sleeping mats, and they're wonderfully small and light.
Mm-hmm. And bulletproof
practically, yeah. What else do we have in our bags apart from that?
This is the thing. There's more mixed stuff, Kindles and so on to keep ourselves busy, decks of cards, chess sets, that type of thing.
Of course, we have a first aid kit.
Yeah, we have a first aid kit that we've never used because we are really lucky mostly, yeah.
I see you wearing trail shoes, I think, in the video. So do you take a second pair of shoes as well, some flip-flops or something?
I had a pair of flip-flops last year and for on and off this year. I personally really like being able to take off the soaking wet shoes when I can.
And yeah, I actually only have the one pair of shoes with me at any given moment. I've been wearing Merrell Moabs, either the boot or the shoe version, for 4 years now, I think. This is my seventh pair, I think, of them. And I found them to be okay enough that I don't want to change them. I'm just comfortable enough in them to not really need to take them off at the end of a long day, which is definitely something that's a lifesaver, because I don't think anybody wants to see my feet in sandals.
I presume if you've got rid of your cooking gear, have you got rid of everything, you know, the spork or the knife and some sort of plate or whatever, just in case you have some vegetables to eat raw or fruit, or have you just got rid of everything?
The only thing we really have is my Opinel knife, which is a standard issue folding knife. Beyond that, we don't have anything like that. Fruitcake, you see, doesn't need a plate.
Well, that's right, yeah, especially if you put your face down in the bowl.
That's exactly it.
But I'm just, you know, trying to visualise this, and I'm sure everybody is listening to this as well. You know, if you took all your tech out of the way, you've got a change of clothes and a sleeping mat, sleeping bag, and a tent, and that's it.
We have a bag of toiletries.
Yes,
yeah, we have a dry bag with toothbrush, toothpaste, mouthwash, that kind of. I think that's almost it. Sun cream. We bring umbrellas.
Yes, umbrellas are actually much better than I expected, because we don't actually have proper waterproofs. Which actually I think shocks a lot of people that we don't have, you know, overs for our trousers. Our jackets are, I mean, they're rain jackets, but they're also not maybe, well, at least mine, it's not really meant as a big adventure jacket. And it turns out that umbrellas are an excellent way to get around that problem, and a very cheap way to get around it too.
It also, I don't know, for me personally, if I've been walking for multiple hours in the rain and I've had my hood up all that time, my whole face is just kind of wet and clammy and you can't really hear anything around you, and sometimes you can't even tell how bad the rain is. All you know is it's wet. And it's really nice to be able to put down your hood and kind of breathe freely and kind of look around you a bit more clearly and
I think the thing with umbrellas is they work exceedingly well, particularly I'm told on something like the Camino. But it, obviously, if you're using walking poles, then it does cause a bit of a problem. But I think from the videos, you haven't been using poles, have you?
No, actually, yeah. And we were in fact listening to your episode with the Bog Beauties earlier on, and they also mentioned that they really love walking poles. It's just something we've never really tried. Neither of us are. I mean, there's. I suppose the thing is that we don't do an awful lot of actual mountain walking. There are a lot of hills for sure, but the steepness just isn't there a lot of the time for us to really need it.
But you're young, you see. That's young and invincible. But actually, there's a good point about the poles is that they're also extremely useful when you are bog hopping. And I just want to talk about this for a second because I've met some Americans this year that came to Scotland for the first time and they went up to their armpits in a bog without realizing what they were heading into. Some people have an idea that they're, you know, thick, dense mud and you're just sinking to your ankles. And sometimes, obviously, it's the more wetter variety, it goes up to your armpits. Now, we've been joking about the boggy side of Ireland, but just to put people's mind at rest, how would you describe it to somebody that's never seen one before?
Take your time. I think the days that we've tried to rush through a bog have always ended slightly worse for wear. There's no speeding through it. No matter how familiar I think you are, there's no kind of fast way through a bog.
Make sure you enjoy every minute of dry ground that you're on. Like, don't rush straight back off of it as soon as you get to a dry stretch. Don't power through. Make sure that you are happy with your life before you continue.
But Irish bogs, some bogs are still being worked and then some are just kind of complete wilderness. So some are still being harvested for peat. And those ones tend to be a little bit more maintained. So the trail on those ones would be a bit more strict and you'd know where you're going, whereas some of the wilder bogs, you see a fence post 500 metres away with some yellow paint on it. So you know that's the way you're going and you just kind of have to navigate around the marshy pools. Mm-hmm. In general, the brighter and more green and vibrant the ground is, the wetter and less inviting it is, I think we've typically found. I don't know if that's an accurate description.
That sounds good. No, it's a good clear way of putting it to people that may not have experienced it before, because I'd never realised that some of these Americans had never seen, understood or had any idea what a bog was actually consisted of, but they soon found out. The other thing I wanted to ask you just very quickly as we touch on water is, have you taken or did you find you needed a water filter at all?
We had drops last year and we barely used them. We literally once or twice.
Yeah, so I think this year, the second and third trail.
Yeah, this year we have chlorine tablets with us just in case. But we carry 3 or 4 litres of water with us. And because none of that is needed for cooking, it's just for us to drink. That tends to be enough to get us between towns. Of course, different people drink different amounts. But we haven't needed a filter.
But we do constantly think about getting one just because everybody else seems to have one.
Yeah, it is one of those things, isn't it? It's a bit like GPSs. Right. Okay. Let's just now a bit more the philosophical side of things. Tell me in your own words about the other person. What have you learned most about the partner you're walking with?
I have learned that Ellie looks at her feet more than she looks around. That is my number one thing that I've learned.
I am a clumsy walker. what have I learned most about you?
Let's find out.
You're not going to find the same things hard, or hopefully you're not going to have the same problems, which in one sense makes it harder to relate, but in the other sense it means that more often than not we both don't have our bad days at the same time, and learning how to help somebody through their bad days has been an unexpected, I guess, part of this trip. Because, yeah, of course, there's some stretch where one of us is just going to be like, nope, don't want to do this anymore. And unknowing either why they're feeling that way or how to at least drag them another 100 meters forward until they kind of get their head back in the game, I think, has been...
You know, there's only two of us, right? You're definitely talking about me.
No, like, but I'm talking about
the other partner. Yeah.
But I feel like you've definitely had to help me through stretches as well, the two of us.
I mean, I've definitely learned that Ellie is about 5 times more hardcore than I am. because on top of doing all the walking, Ellie also does nearly all of the filming. And that does take an awful lot of work. And then nearly all of the editing too. So again, way more work than I'm doing. Really, I'm just on holidays and Ellie's doing tons of work. It's great for me.
Yeah, yeah, that's why we see the video of you walking away all the time. It sounds about right. Yeah,
And what
misconceptions have you both had to readdress about Ireland itself from doing this walk?
I'm not sure if it's about Ireland specifically. I mean, we obviously did think it would take us only about 6 months, and it's taken us much longer. I think maybe we didn't expect it to be as beautiful or as good as it is, which is maybe a very marketing-y way to say this, but I certainly found that I wanted to take a lot longer out there because it's so pretty or it's so nice or there's so much rich heritage or culture. I didn't expect to want to stop in a random tiny little town somewhere because they were playing trad music the next night and I thought, oh, let's go do that. Or I suppose I never expected Ireland to have as much stuff in it as it does. Every town we walk past, there's the Daniel O'Donnell Remembrance Centre or the pub where Enya grew up, all kinds of stuff like that that we completely did not expect to be there.
Maybe on a less, like, I guess that's the upside. On the downside, it is a bit expensive. Originally, we had budgeted that we could do everything on, for the two of us, €20 a day, which
we've managed to do maybe on 5 separate days during the entire project.
We were pretty strict when we started. This year, we upped it to 40, $40 a day. And even at that, it hasn't quite been able to cover it. If you want to stay indoors, it's not cheap. And when you've been in the rain for 3 days, you definitely want to stay indoors every now and again.
I mean, that's a good question to sort of come to, if you don't mind me asking. Is I know you've got contributions on your Patreon, but it's not touching on that sort of budget. How are you actually managing financially? Because as you say, you've given everything up, given your work up.
Well, I mean, we hit €10.41 in my bank account the other week. That was great. We had
relatively good savings going into it last year, and then about 6 months into the project, I actually broke my foot, which was not an enjoyable experience and very, very frustrating at the time. But it did mean that we got to take a bit of a break, and we both went back working again for a couple of months. We were still trying to get out and do shorter walks and kind of visit some heritage sites around the country. But that did mean we did get to take the winter section of last winter off and earn some more money again. And now that we're heading into winter for the second time, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would estimate that we spend €900 or €1,000 every month that we're walking, which... It's hard to grasp that at scale, I suppose, but that's kind of roughly the level for us. And I don't, to be honest, know whether that's good or bad. All I know is that we're constantly running out of money. But it's, you know, it's part of the experience, definitely. It's definitely a big... It's an enjoyable challenge a lot of the time. Because the thing is, it's not like we're trying to meet rent or anything like that. The worst thing that happens is we have to eat even cheaper fruitcakes, or go back to our parents' houses in the absolute worst situation. We have so few responsibilities beyond just getting to the end of the next trail when we're walking that it's not that scary when you run out of money. It's just maybe slightly annoying.
I think from touching on my history many years ago of traveling on a shoestring, I think it's the best type of traveling you can do. You get a much richer experience, tough as it may be. You get a much richer experience. And as a result of this epic adventure, 42 trails, you're going to have a sort of a huge library of experience and knowledge and information. What do you plan to do with it all?
That's a good question. I mean, the thing I instantly plan on doing is telling every single person I know that I'm one of the only two people to walk every trail in Ireland. But long term?
A lot of people ask if we're going to write a book. So
we're not completely sure yet. Yeah, we don't know what that would look like. A lot of the trails that we do don't have that many great resources out there for what it's actually like to walk. So maybe we could do a guidebook, but it's not really clear what we'll do with it long term, I don't think. We do also have four or five terabytes, I think, of video footage that could probably become a film if we really tried.
Right, well, let's bring this to a close then. I just wanted to mention to listeners, I know that you're members of the Leave No Trace organisation, and you're also Great Outdoors Ambassadors, and that shines through in everything that you do, which is great. And it's also, all the information is to be found on your website, and the information and links will be in the show notes. But of course, one final question, and if you've been listening to my podcast, you know what this question's going to be. Of all the things I could have asked you about this project, what should I have asked you?
Oh, we were going to come up with a really good one, and now we've forgotten what it was. I think a question that a lot of people ask us that you haven't is, how haven't we killed each other yet? And I think that is a good question, honestly, is how have we managed to do what is now 3,500 kilometers, give or take, with essentially just the other person to keep us company. And honestly, I have no idea how Ellie hasn't murdered me in my sleep by now. Because it would be so easy. All she'd have to do is push me off one of the cliffs. And, you know, it could be an accident. I don't know how it hasn't happened. See, did you hear no response from Ellie there? Cold silence, that's what it was.
Carl and Ellie are doing this for the love of it. And for the love of rural Ireland. As you heard, they are both currently being forced to rest due to bad chest infections, but still plan to complete the last 7 trails as soon as they're well enough. It would give them a huge emotional boost if you could subscribe to any of their social media accounts. Leave messages, share content, and share some love. And if you're feeling a little bit generous with Christmas coming up, a few euros in the Patreon account I'm sure wouldn't go amiss either. They really are a couple of tough souls and should be celebrated for setting themselves an inspiring goal whilst willing to make the sacrifices necessary to achieve it. My thanks to them both for taking the time to chat, and we wish them a full recovery very soon. After all, they've only got 7 more trails to complete, with autumn now upon us and winter obviously looming. Think of these guys as they head out to complete this inspiring dream. Until next time, folks. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.